All right, how about now?
There we go. All right, I'm gonna get out of your way.
Okay. Hi, everyone. Oh, wow, people are awake. It's good to be here. I can't believe it's already been a year. Like, weren't we just here talking about a whole bunch of this stuff? It's great to have you guys back. I'm gonna be talking primarily about MVC6. Because this is supposed to be educational, I'm also gonna sort of level set a bit, just make sure we're all on the same page about what we've been doing for the past year. The good news is that a lot of the stuff that I was going through our ASP.NET 5 content, it's unchanged. It's what we told you guys a year ago, primarily. Things, I think we've had a few more betas than maybe we initially expected. I've never shipped a product with 9 betas before, but that's all right. You know, every release is getting better. These past two releases that we just did, beta 7 and beta 8, our .NET Core cross-plat story is really lighting up. This last beta in particular, you know, crypto, globalization, networking is showing up there. That's all really exciting. So lots happening, a lot of work has been occurring, but the goal is still the same. We're still trying to build ASP.NET 5, which is a new modern web stack, and this is really new. I assume most of you guys have been playing around with the bits, but if you haven't, this is a new stack. You may be a little surprised, even shocked when you start playing with the bits about how much is new and interesting and different. And that's by design. We are, you know, starting a new stack from the ground up, even from the CLR itself. This stack is being designed to build modern web applications that are targeted for the cloud. We have the cloud in mind now using .NET. And the reasons why we've been doing that, those are unchanged as well. We want a stack now that is completely modular. You can have just the pieces of the stack that you need and nothing more. You get true side-by-side versioning where you can have completely different bits running in two different apps side-by-side and they don't affect each other at all. We want to be able to give you those modules faster, have a much more agile development cycle for the product. So everything is a NuGet package. We can just ship new updated NuGet packages. You can grab them, you can use them, and not have to worry about breaking other apps on your machines. We care about the cloud. Obviously, our org sits inside of Azure, so we want to make sure that our bits work really, really well inside of the inside of Azure and other clouds as well. Everything that we're designing has that cloud mindset as we add features. We want to make sure that we're not coupled or using Visual Studio as like a crutch. Like, you should be able to get up and running with your text editor of choice and just a command prompt, and that should be sufficient. If you want to use Sublime or Vim or Emacs or whatever, that's totally cool with ASP.NET 5 and the .NET story going forward. The whole stack, of course, is open source, supports cross-platform. You can run it on Linux, you can run it on Mac, you can run it on Windows, last but not least. And lastly, we want it to be fast. For performance, you should make sure you come to the performance talk. I think it's tomorrow, I think Damien's doing it, where we'll talk about a lot of the cool performance work that we've been doing in the stack. But these goals have been unchanged. This is what we're trying to do. Glenn just showed you the getting started experience for the new stuff that we're working on, the new get.asp.net site. If you're trying to get started with ASP.NET 5 right now, these are the steps that you need to do today with the beta 8 bits. If you're on Windows, you should go get Visual Studio 2015. Like I said, you don't technically need it, but that's where you're going to get our like red carpet tooling. You know, all the bells and whistles are there. Get Visual Studio 2015, and then you'll want to install the beta 8 tooling update on top of Visual Studio 2015. If you haven't done that already, you should be doing that, like right now. Go ahead, clog the network, just download Visual Studio. You can get Community Edition, it's free. Install the beta 8 tooling on top of it. You're gonna wanna do that. You're gonna wanna have those bits. If you're on OS X or Linux, we have Visual Studio Code as a tooling experience. Again, that's not required. It's just a way to do .NET development, a great way on Mac and on Linux. And then you use the .NET Version Manager tool, DNVM, to acquire a .NET execution environment that you can then use to run and install and publish ASP.NET 5 applications. We do have docs. Those are on the doc site, docs.asp.net, and our samples and code are all on GitHub, github.com/asp.net. I'll be talking actually more about our docs and how we're doing docs tomorrow. So what is ASP.NET 5? This is a picture that's supposed to show it in a nutshell. And this is one of those diagrams that I hope will clarify one of those things that's kind of confusing about ASP.NET 5. Like, where does it start? Where does it end? What are these all these pieces? .NET Core, you know, .NET ASP.NET 4.6, ASP.NET 5. How does this all fit together? Well, at the bottom, let's start on your left-hand side with the .NET 4.6 story. This is the story of ASP.NET that you know today, that you know and love. You have the full .NET framework only on Windows. It's a Windows-only platform. Within that .NET framework, you have ASP.NET 4.6 that has web forms and all the HTTP modules and HTTP handlers and the pipeline for running web applications on the full .NET framework. And on top of that, we built a variety of application frameworks, web forms, MVC, SignalR, and so forth. On the right-hand side is the new world, where at the bottom you've got .NET Core. And .NET Core is that version of .NET that's been componentized into a bunch of NuGet packages, so you can pull in just the parts that you need. It's open source. It also runs on a variety of platforms, Mac, Linux, Windows. It's based on a new CLR. We call it Core CLR, so you may see that in our tooling. Core CLR is the .NET Core side. Full .NET framework is when we're referring to the desktop framework. With a new CLR, you need something to actually host the CLR. You need a native piece of code that actually will boot up the CLR so you can run .NET code. When you're doing that on Windows, there's magic in Windows that handles that for you. Windows basically has a built-in CLR host for you for the .NET framework. But when you're dealing with .NET Core and you're on a Mac or on a Linux machine, obviously you don't have those components available to you, so you need a new host. That new host is what we've been calling the .NET Execution Environment, or DNX. So that's sort of the base layer that's actually going to boot up the CLR and get some managed code running. On top of that, we then have our new web framework, ASP.NET 5, you know, new lightweight middleware pipeline. I'll talk about it in a second. And then on top of ASP.NET 5, you've then got MVC 6, which is our new application platform for building not only web UI, but also web APIs. Okay, and it's been, honestly, a lot of fun to watch people try and keep those version numbers straight. You know, is it ASP.NET MVC 5, 6, ASP.NET 6, 5, but it's MVC 6, ASP.NET 5. Those are the correct version numbers. Apologize for the off by one. We did think about, you know, just bumping them both up to 10. You know, we could just say, you know, it's just 10, MVC 10, and ASP.NET 10, but, you know, seemed a little excessive. Just a quick word on DNX, on the .NET execution environment. Again, this is really below ASP.NET. This is a generic piece. It's not specific to web development. You can run console app like patterns with DNX. This is the thing, again, it's going to give you your native host for the CLR. Yeah, you should notice that it bridges the two worlds. You see that, right? Like, it's not just a straight split down the middle. That's because DNX can run on Core CLR, but it can also actually boot up the full desktop CLR if you happen to be running on Windows. It can also boot up Mono, or sit on top of Mono when you're running on Mac or Linux. So it has actually a flexibility in terms of which CLR it sits on top of. We think that's important because if you're moving to .NET Core, it's a fairly major change. The API surface area in .NET Core, your core libraries, they look like .NET, you know, it's still dictionaries and collections and those types of things. But in order to, you know, decouple everything into NuGet packages, the API got, shall we say, modernized. And so if you have a binary that runs on the full .NET framework today, it doesn't necessarily run, it probably actually won't run as is on .NET Core. You generally need to recompile it against the new API surface area. And there's tools to help you do that. If you haven't heard of the API portability scanner, that's a tool you can run over your binaries, and it'll tell you which APIs need to change if you want to run on .NET Core. But DNX can run on both because you may have libraries that aren't ported to .NET Core yet. And you still want to be able to use the ASP.NET 5 pipeline, so you can have the option of taking DNX and saying, I want to run on a .NET framework-based DNX when you're running on Windows. That's supported. The DNX includes Roslyn for a compiler. It includes cross-plat tools for building your .NET applications. There's a tool called .NET Development Utility, or DNU. You use it for things like restoring your packages, installing packages, and so forth, publishing. Creating packages. The whole DNX system is based on a new project system because we want a project system that is OSS friendly and that works cross-platform. something that you can, you know, check in your app into, commit your app into GitHub, and then have someone clone it on a Mac or on a Windows machine, and it should still just work without having to have, there shouldn't be any OS-specific artifacts. So DNX introduces a lightweight project.json file as a simple way to manage your .NET-based projects. The whole system is also package-based. All of your dependencies that you express in a DNX-based project, those are all packages. They're a name of a package and a version. It's also a first-class concept in this project system to create packages that target multiple frameworks. It's fairly simple to do in a DNX-based project. And of course, DNX itself supports side-by-side versioning. Now, granted, this is if you're using the beta 8 bits today, that's what you'll be using, and you'll see the terms DNX. But this is actually something that is going through some level of evolution. We've been working on DNX on the ASP.NET side for web apps, you know, really with like a, you can think of it as like a node view of the world. We want to be able to compete with that, you know, node or Python style, lightweight, agile application frameworks. Our friends in the .NET team, though, at the same time have been thinking a lot about, you know, how could we get more native, you know, how do we do native exes in this world? How do we do native exes on a Mac? You know, maybe more Go-like patterns. So this is actually evolving into something that I think informally we've been referring to as .NET CLI. That's not a name I think that'll go out publicly. But later this afternoon, we'll be having a bunch of talks that'll be talking about how DNX is evolving, how it's getting even more features and more capabilities that are pretty interesting. I'm actually pretty interested to hear about it because it's really new stuff. I don't even know all the things they're going to be telling you. So make sure you check out those talks this afternoon. So then that's DNX. On top of DNX, you then have ASP.NET 5, the actual web application framework. The web application framework gives you hosting. We have a new managed server that's Kestrel. There's a startup model for configuring your middleware pipeline, your HTTP request processing pipeline. We give you a bunch of middleware out of the box for doing all the things that you'll want to be able to do with the web app. Routing, authentication, static files is separate middleware, diagnostics, error handling, session, course. You can see why this project takes a little while. Right, like there's a lot of stuff to bring over into this world. Cores, localization story, and of course you can build your own middleware as well. I'm dropping my notes. All right, the whole system is also built with a first class dependency injection model. It has actually a little IOC container that's built in to bootstrap the system, but the system is designed to have DI exposed in a first class way. All of your middleware can have services injected into them. It's designed so that MVC controllers and filters and views and those type of things can have services injected into them. And although we provide you a small, simple IOC container by default, which we don't even give a name because it's kind of like the least common denominator, you know, the thing that everyone, the thing that, you know, you can get away with that everyone else supports. If you actually want to use your own IOC container like AutoFact or Ninjack, that's totally fine. You can pull out our IOC container, put yours in, and then you can use all the bells and whistles of that particular IOC container that you want to use. There's a new configuration model in ASP.NET 5 that replaces system configuration, web.config. There's really not web.config in this world. You may see it in our project templates, but that's purely because of IIS, because we still use IIS as our front internet-facing host when you're on Windows. But if you're on like a Mac or Linux, you won't see web.config at all. Instead, there's a new config pattern that gives you a lightweight way of getting name-value pairs. New logging infrastructure, and then on top, finally, our application frameworks like MVC6, which is hopefully what we'll be spending most of the time talking about here. Okay, let's start talking about MVC6. So that's ASP.NET 5. On top of ASP.NET 5, we wanted to have, you know, a story for building web UI, web APIs, and we have MVC and web API today for doing those things, SignalR as well. Unfortunately, in the world of ASP.NET today, these are all separate pillars. They're binaries that honestly share almost no code at all, unless you count like copying and pasting a bunch of code sharing. That's the only way that these frameworks actually share code. Like web pages and MVC today, they share Razor, but their HTML helpers are completely different. With MVC and web API, they actually, even though they look very similar, like they both have controllers, they both have filters and those types of things, they actually don't share any implementation code at all for those frameworks. So when we move to ASP.NET 5 and we're thinking about how can we build our new web platform on top of this framework, we wanted to have something that was more unified. You know, avoid the duplication in concepts, avoid the duplication in code so that we have less to maintain so we can ship you features faster, and also just make it less confusing. So MVC 6 is designed to be a unification of MVC, web API, and also, honestly, web pages as well. We haven't done that work yet. We do plan to do web pages in the future, but as a unified stack on top of this model. And that's what MVC 6 is really all about. So MVC 6, one set of concepts, you know, one controller-based type, one filter by pipeline, one way of doing DI built on top of ASP.NET 5. You should be able to do web UI and web APIs with this framework. It's built on ASP.NET 5, so you still get all the goodness of ASP.NET 5. You get the middleware that comes with ASP.NET 5, you know, authentication, cores, and all those things. You get the cross-platform support, because ASP.NET 5 runs on .NET Core, runs cross-platform, MVC 6 runs on top of that as well. So you get all those benefits. One second, Daryl. And then you get the support for running self-hosted, because ASP.NET 5 can run in hosted in IIS, or you can run it in your own process through Kestrel, our new managed web server. And then we have DI that's integrated throughout the stack based off of the DI in ASP.NET 5. You can inject services into your controllers, into your filters, and even into your views. And there was a question.
So unified framework, but we have controller and API controller. Is the guidance that API controller should be the default things for doing web API, or is that viewed purely as backward compatibility?
Sure. So the question was, it's a unified framework, but you still see a controller-based type and an API controller-based type. The API controller-based type actually only appears in a package that we've called the Web API Compat Shim. And that's very intentional, because the reason why that guy exists is if you are a Web API 2 customer today, where you have API controller as your base type, you're using the conventions that Web API 2 was based on, you may have a code that you want to migrate into the MVC 6 world. The Web API compaction was designed to make that as painless as possible, with as few code changes as possible needed for your controller level code. So that's why that guy exists. That is honestly sort of a fork. It's really a compat package. We hope that we've designed an experience for doing web APIs in the core of MVC 6 that is compelling in of itself, in which case you don't even, I'll show this, you actually don't even need a base type to do web APIs in MVC 6 at all. So that's why API controller is there. It's really for compatibility. It's not that we think that is the one way to do web APIs in MVC 6. And actually, I would even say, unless you really want to use it, I would recommend not using it. If you have a lot of web API code you need to migrate, okay, sure, that can make your life easier. If you don't have that problem, then I would leave the web API compat shim to the side. That's fair. We should talk more about that, because we'd love to hear that feedback. I know on the MVC team, that certainly when we did the unification, a lot more was swayed towards the MVC side in terms of programming model. And that's totally fair. If there are things that you find that are, you know, you wish were done differently, we'd love to get that feedback about how we could tweak things to make them better. There isn't a lot of big new features, I would say, in MVC 6 in terms of functionality, because most of the work is honestly just getting onto ASP.NET 5 and unifying the stacks. But there are a bunch of great improvements, and one of them is tag helpers. There's also a lot of improvements across the stack, which I'll highlight in a minute or two. I'm not going to be talking about tag helpers, because there's a whole talk on tag helpers in just a little bit later today. Taylor will be talking about that, and you'll get to see them. But they're pretty cool. OK, enough talk. Let's see some code. Let's see ASP.NET 5 and MVC 6. All right. So what I've done here, this is Visual Studio 2015. I've already created a new MVC 6 project. And this is just file new project, create a new starter web app, basically, an ASP.NET 5 starter web app. And you'll notice that I hope that a lot of this looks very familiar. Like we have our controller, it's got actions, it has view results, those types of things. We have views. Views has CSHTML. This is just Razor. Let me open up index.cshtml. That looks pretty normal. This should look like, you know, MVC 5, honestly, in a lot of ways. And that is very intentional. Your views and your controller code that you have today for MVC 5, that code we've worked pretty hard to try and make as compatible as possible. We've made some changes, some tweaks in some places, because we do want to make sure we're, you know, setting ourselves up with a good foundation. But for the most part, your controller code should not have to change. when you move it to MVC 6. You get lower, like into extensibility points, or like into how like routing plugs into the system. Yeah, things are pretty different at those layers, but your application logic, your controllers, your views, that should be pretty much the same. So that should feel very familiar when you're coming to MVC 6. Let's run this guy. I'm just gonna control F5. And this should look like, you know, a normal template app from Visual Studio. This is actually running on IIS. You can see that down here in the corner. There's IIS Express. It's up and running. Just to prove it, there's the URL, 223360. Yep, that looks like the same URL is up there. Okay, but because this is running on ASP.NET 5, of course, we're not constrained to only running on IIS. I'm going to use one of the cool features of tooling in Visual Studio where you can select a different debug profile for running different DNX-based commands. I'm going to run this web command. What is that going to do? Well, if I look at the project JSON file, that's what defines this as a project for DNX. There's a command defined in here that says, if I run the web command, then run it on Kestrel, which is our managed web server. So let's do that. So when I run this now, instead of popping up IIS Express and the browser, now I just get like a console app that pops up, and MVC 6 is running on top of ASP.NET 5 just in the console window, and we can, again, browse to this. And I think it said port 5000, is that right? Yep, port 5000 right there. And in here, we should have MVC 6 running completely self-hosted. So that's self-hosting of your MVC 6 applications. All right, let's go. Let me close this. I'm going to switch back to IIS Express. If we look at our startup logic for this application, let me collapse so we can see what's in here. In an ASP.NET 5 app, you basically have two core concepts for your startup logic. One is this configure method in a startup class. And this is where you're gonna find your middleware pipeline, the thing that's actually gonna handle the request as it comes into the system. And we've got a bunch of stuff that's, well, you know, there's so many comments, it makes it hard to see. Let me just clean this up a bit so we can maybe get more of it on one page. So we got some logging that's set up. Wow, lots of comments. Oh my goodness, lots of comments. Let's get rid of all this stuff. Okay, that's a little bit better. Okay, so we got some logging that's set up, some middleware for dealing with error handling and error pages. We've got a piece of middleware that's there to handle setting up IIS features when you're running on IIS. That's what that guy's doing. Setting up static files. Identity is wiring up authentication support, you know, cookie-based authentication. And then lastly, we got MVC. Oh, more comments. Okay. And MVC is actually sitting on top of vanilla middleware from ASP.NET 5. It just runs on top of the routing middleware that comes with ASP.NET 5. So if you actually went in here and said, you know, app.use router, you know, there you could use the routing middleware by itself without using MVC at all. And that use MVC, that's all it's doing. It's just adding the routing middleware and then sitting itself on top of it. But that's cool. So, and then inside this Lambda is where you're configuring your MVC routes. And this should look like a normal MVC route with a few improvements. Instead of having to use like anonymous object syntax or whatever it's called, you can now just specify your defaults in line. Some of these features we had in attribute routing in MVC 5 and WebAPI 2, but now we've added them to the conventional routing style. So default value again for action, optionality you can express with question marks inside your route values. You can also do things like express constraints, inline constraints inside your route templates as well. So if I wanted to say, you know, this really should be an integer, that's totally cool. You can do that. So let's run. Actually, let me show the route constraints real quick. So I'm going to go to my home controller. There we are. I'm just going to add a little simple action here. Let's call it get value. Stick an ID. And we're going to return value ID. All right, cool. And yeah, and I'm going to be, even though it's a web action, I'm going to use conventional routes to hit it. So am I still running? No. Let me close this. So let's run this. Okay, so now if I do home get value using conventional routing style, you know, 1, 2, 3. I should get back value 1, 2, 3. Okay, see that? All right, that's cool. And if I do home get value, you know, ABC, remember that action was typed as an int. You know, ABC is not going to bind. So it'll get some model validation error and complain about it. Let me just, and I should get, yeah, I get, it doesn't bind. So instead I could just get the default value for the int. If I wanted to check, you know, whether that binding error occurred, I could check the model state and say, you know, is the model state valid? And if not, throw some error. So that didn't bind, and instead I kind of got a garbage response. But if instead I went into the routes and startup and said, you know, that int actually has, that ID has to be an integer. Let me save that. Now if I try to hit this endpoint, I'm actually gonna get a 404. And that's because the inline constraint is saying, you know, if this value is not an integer, then the route doesn't hit and keep on going. So this action doesn't get found at all. So that's inline constraints in action inside of your conventional routes. Another interesting thing about routing in ASP.NET 5 and MVC 6 is that it falls through. Like if you have this situation where one route doesn't hit, it'll actually just go on to the next route and give it a chance. Okay, let me show you what that looks like. So if I add another route here, like routes, map route, let's call this guy oops. And let's make its template just be home. Okay, so this is gonna eat up any request that's made to home/home, which normally would go to the home page, right? But since this route is there, you know, in previous stacks, you would just hit this route and nothing would happen. But just to show that this route is being hit, nope, I don't want constraints. I want defaults. What I'm going to do here, I am going to use this syntax to just say I want to go to the home controller when this route hits and go to the about action. Okay? So now if I browse to home, I should end up at the about action on the app. So let's try that. So if I go to home, okay. So now I'm on the about page, which works. Okay. Now what if I put something here though that doesn't exist? You know, something that's not there, or I had a constraint, you know, that wasn't satisfied. In MVC 5, this would hit, and you get a 404, right? But in the new world, if I now browse to home, it didn't hit that route because it didn't go to the about action. Instead, it just went to the next route, and now I'm on the home page. Okay, so that's another difference in how routing works in this world. And we hope that makes things easier because a lot of times, you know, you got your route orders messed up, and one route is consuming things, and it's kind of hard to figure out what order you need to put things in. In this world, it's much more flexible. Routes will just fall through if they don't actually hit anything. All right, cool. So that is conventional routing. There's also attribute routing, which I'll get to in just a second when I start getting into web APIs. But before I get there, I want to show some of the views features. Let's go look at some of the stuff that you can do in MVC in your views. So first of all, one of the big new views features, of course, is tag helpers, which you'll be seeing in a bit. But there's other stuff as well. So first of all, let me open up layouts and shared. So here's my layout. One of the cool new things about Views and Razor in MVC 6 is that it's now asynchronous. Everything gets executed asynchronously on the page. And you can see that. Like down here at the bottom, there's a partial that's getting included in the layout by default in the template. And it's partial async instead of just partial. That's because you can run asynchronous logic now in these pages. And you'll notice that there's new syntax here to enable that. You can at await asynchronous logic from within your Razor pages. So if you're doing like web pages style apps, or you're doing more, you know, logic inside of your pages, that might be interesting. One of the other interesting things you can do with that is you can actually asynchronously flush the page out wherever you're currently at in terms of the rendering cycle. And there's an API for doing that, flush async. Let me show you that. So let's imagine that my page, for whatever reason, takes a long time to render. So I'm going to add like a system.threading.sleep, threading.thread.sleep, let's say 5 seconds right here. Okay? All right, and I'm going to do this actually self-hosted. All right, and let's run this and just see what the behavior is. Pop up Chrome. Okay, now I'm doing this right after the header, and notice like the header's name is MVP demo. Like the title of this page is MVP demo, so I should, you know, eventually see that show up in the tab, right? Let me pop up the Chrome DevTools and let's run this. and I wait 1, 2, some number of seconds. And then, you know, it kind of just waits 5 seconds, and then finally you get the page. Instead, if you wanted to have the head show up first, you know, get for time to first byte is important for your app. You want to get that first byte down as quickly as you can. You can instead do at await flush async. Okay, and so now what it's going to do is going to flush the head down as quickly as possible, and then the rest of the page will take 5 seconds hopefully to render if this all works correctly. All right, so let me just to make sure I'm, is it blank? Just clear everything out so that we have a nice clean slate. Okay, now let's hit localhost 5000. So you notice, you see the tabs already showed up, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then the rest of the page shows up, okay? So that's something you can do now with MEC6. You can just flush part of the page and then while the rest of it continues to render. And it all happens asynchronously. What else is new in Vue's? C# 6 support. C# 6 support. Let me go back to IS. Yes, I heard a question. Go ahead.
So the flush, is it only once, or can I flush parts of the pages?
You can flush as many times as you want. Just flush. You know, you got another chunk, flush it. Yep, you can keep on going. Flush that toilet. Sorry, I couldn't resist. All right, C# 6 support. You can use C# 6 support in MVC 6 views. Let's go to about. That's easy. So let me fire this up. Let's go to the about page. Right now it just says about at the top, but you know you can say var me equals me, and now we can add some like string interpolation here. And you see, I even me. Yeah. So you're not getting IntelliSense inside the Razor editor for C# 6 features. Let's complete that. I get it all right. Yep. Okay. And then let's refresh the page. I should see about me now. Okay. So you can use C# 6 within your views. There's also some interesting new concepts. This view imports page. You might be like, what is that thing? That's new. That's a new artifact. In MVC5, you would have all your using statements in like a web.config file, I believe, is where you would do it. In MVC6, there's no web.config. So instead, you have this view imports artifact, which will basically stamp this header on each of your pages. So this is where all your using statements can live, and also any tag helpers that you're importing into the application. So that's new. And then lastly, thing I was going to show was injecting of services. Like if you have a service that you want to make available to you in your views, you can do that as well. Let me go to the login page. So this is the login page, which is using ASP.NET Identity. And you'll see here at the top, there's this at inject. You guys see that? At inject. At inject is a way to inject a service into your page. So this is saying, I want a sign-in manager of application user, and basically turn this into a property for me on my Razor page called sign-in manager. And if we go searching through here, let's see, where do we find it? Where's it used? There, you can just then use sign-in manager dot and make calls onto that service. So DI works in your views, and it works everywhere. Like you can use it in your controllers. If we go look at the account controller itself, this guy is using, of course, DI heavily to get a bunch of services in the constructor. By default, we support constructor injection. And so like the email sender service and the SMS sender service, these are services it's using for account confirmation and two-factor auth, those types of things. Those are made available to this controller through DI. If we go into startup, that other artifact that I didn't show before, configure services, is where you can configure all your services for your ASP.NET 5 app. So down here at the bottom, you'll see it's adding two transient services, iEmail sender and iSMS sender. And those are just available everywhere where DI works. All right, cool. So that's sort of the web UI side of MVC6. Let's look at now web API side of MVC6. I'm going to start fresh on this one. I'm going to do file new project. Let's call this MVP Poco demo. Okay. Yeah. Let's get rid of that guy. Okay. And so at the top are your 4.6 templates. You need to go to the bottom where your ASP.NET 5 templates live. And we're going to start with empty, with nothing. Okay. Okay. And then we're going to build a simple web API. This template now has nothing. It doesn't have MVC6 in it at all. So let's go into our project JSON and add some MVC. And normally you would add Microsoft at ASP.NET.MVC. That has, you know, all the web UI stuff, views and filters and formatters and stuff like that. I'm just going to add Microsoft.ASP.NET.Core, MVC.Core. Okay, just the core of MVC. I don't want it all, just the core. Okay, and now I'm going to go into my startup class, and I've got some simple run method I'm just going to get rid of. And I'm going to app.useMVC. That's no different. I'm not going to add any routes here because I'm going to use attribute routes for everything that I'm going to do with web APIs. And then services dot, actually I'm going to put the dot below. I'm going to add MVC. Instead of add MVC, I'm going to do add MVC core. I just want the core services of MVC, okay? And do I need anything else? I think that's enough for right, what I'm going to do right now. Let me add a controller. And I say controller here in the abstract sense. So I'm going to controllers. Let's add a class. Let's call this Poco controller. All right, and this is just a class. And I'm just going to add my actions right here. Public string get value int ID. This is my favorite simple little action. Value ID. Okay. That's it. I'm gonna run it. Okay. Oh, wait, hold on. Sorry. I need at least some routing information on this guy. So let's put some routing information on this guy. I'm gonna give it a route on the controller. And this is, you can think of it as like a prefix. One of the differences between routing in MVC 6 and MVC 5 or ASP.NET Web API 2 is that, yeah. Did I get it right? I think I got it right. Anyway, is that the attribute routes concatenate in MVC 6, whereas in Web API 2, I think they kind of overrode. So in this model, they concatenate. And I'm going to add a route here. And I want the base route for my Poco API to be just Poco. And I'm going to use a feature that we call route tokens. And it has brackets instead of curlies, okay? What this is just a placeholder that says, please put the name of the controller here. By name meaning just POCO without the controller suffix. All right, so that's convenient because that means I can rename my controller type and not have to worry about updating all my attribute routes. So that's a cool feature. There's also other route tokens you can use. Like there's one for action, there's one for area, and it will just put the name of the area or put the name of the action there in your route. And then let me actually add a route for this guy, and let's just make it ID. And here it's curly braces because this is a route value. It's not a token. This is a placeholder that I want to pull some data out of the request URI. All right, now it should work. Okay, let's go back here. And the right URI should be Poco 123, right? There. You see that? And a couple things to notice here is there's no base type on this guy. Still works. There is actually nothing view related in this app at all. Like, I know one of the things that kind of maybe feels a little icky when you're using MVC for web APIs, you're like, but it's got all this view stuff, and if I don't need views, why do I need to pull that all along? Well, what we did, and I felt this analogy was appropriate because we just had Halloween, is we took like a scalpel to MVC, and we just sort of, you know, carefully chopped all the, you know, it's dissected it into its core pieces. You know, if you just want MVC with just its liver and its leg, that you can do that. You can have just pull in just the pieces of MVC even that you want. And so here I'm just pulling in its core and the stuff that I need to do web API stuff. It doesn't even actually have any formatters in it yet. It has a very simple text-based formatter. If I want to do like JSON, in this model you have to be very explicit. Like, so this is for people who like run on like, you know, those bare minimum versions of Linux, you know, that have like nothing on them. Like, if you like that model where you just have just the pieces that you need, then you'll like this. If you want everything in the kitchen sink just there and it works, then you probably want to, you know, pull the whole MVC package in. Okay, so let me go back here. Let's add some formatters. So I have to actually add the package. Let's do that first. Yes.
Can I slice out model too?
You want no model binding in the system at all? I don't think so. Ryan, am I right that model binding is in core?
Model binding is in core.
Yeah, so model binding is in core.
But
sorry.
I can bypass it, right? I can get it to code. I can get the
You can just take HTTP context and do whatever you want to it. You don't have to touch any of do any of this strongly typed stuff. All right. So now I've got my JSON formatter package. Let's add JSON formatters. Awesome. Okay. Now to do some formatting, I want to have some slightly more interesting actions. Let's do a post action. I'm gonna do. Oh, I need a type. Let's make a type. Public class value. Let's get a int ID and a string message. Okay, cool. Now let's do, what do I want to do here? I think I want to do I action result. And let's do post value. And I'm going to say from the body, I want to post a value. And this is new, this is also new in MVC 6. If you're doing, if you're not doing model binding for like form posts, then you need to say explicitly that this parameter is coming from the body. And that will tell the system, I want to use formatters to deserialize this as the part of the request. All right. And now I want to return what was posted, but also have a location header that has the right URI for where it was posted to. So return, there's a nice action result that we give you for this. Return new created at action result. Yeah, I know. I'm sorry, Damien. Give me 2 minutes. and so I'm gonna use created at action result, and let's see, the action name is get value, and the controller name is Poco, and then I need an ID in there, right? I need a route value of ID. So ID equals, let's take the, there we go, plus plus value, and then let's return value. So this should return me, I created a new value with its ID was incremented as it got posted. And why isn't it like, oh, value.id, thank you. There we go. And then it should just return it. And hopefully, if that works, that should give me the right location header as well. OK, so that's cool. Now, how do I execute this? How do I show this? This is where normally I have to go get Fiddler and run things. I don't want to get Fiddler. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to actually use a community package, which is pretty cool, which is Swashbuckle and use Swagger for calling its APIs. Anyone heard of Swagger before? People know of Swagger? Great, okay. So there's Richard Morris, I think this guy's name. Is it Richard Morris? Yeah. He writes a nice package for Web API 2 and also now for MVC 6 that adds Swagger support to MVC 6. What Swagger is, it's like a metadata document that describes your API. And it also plugs into a nice UI that you can use, like a help page like thing and test client for seeing and calling your API. So in the interest of time, I'm just gonna add this all at once, swashbuckle.swagger. That looks good. And then swashbuckle.swagger UI. That looks great. Okay. And then I'm just going to wire that up. So services.add swagger. Let's add some swagger. And then app.use swagger. That will add the support for the metadata document. And then I'm going to do app.use swagger UI. That will add the actual nice, pretty help page like UI thing. I think that's it. Did I do it? Did I do it all? Let's do it. So I think that URI endpoint for the Swagger UI that it adds is swagger/UI. I forgot one piece. Remember, we're in MVC core land, so everything you need, you have to add explicitly. So let me go back to startup. There's one more piece. I added the core, but I need this other piece, which is the API Explorer functionality in MVC 6. This is the thing that kind of builds an in-memory description of of your application. And that's what Swagger uses to produce these documents there. Now I've added that. Now it should work. All right, cool. So now I'm getting this UI. I can expand it, and I see my actions. So there's the ID action, there's the post. It's even got some nice things like I can have a little test client here. Like here's the parameters, it takes a value, and it has a little thing where I can just plop the JSON in. That looks good. It doesn't give me any information about the response message yet. We'll get to that in a second. But I can execute it, and then there's the response. Notice that the ID was incremented 1. See that? And if we look at the response headers, location, poco/1. So that's all right. And you can even do one step better, which is if you want to actually say what that action returns, you can use the produces attribute. And you can say, this guy returns a value. And Swashbuckle will pick that up and add it to your Swagger document. Because right now it just says, I return an action result. And so the API Explorer is like, well, I don't know what this thing's going to return. But you can add some additional attribute metadata to fix that. So now if we go back, refresh the page, and there. Now we see we have a schema now also for the response. So the response is also a value. So that's pretty cool. All right, I'm over time. And so I'm gonna stop here. But that's MVC6 for web APIs, web UI. We shipped beta 8, shipping RC1 soon, and we'll be shipping ASP.NET 5 in Q1 of 2016. Damien, take it away. Thanks, everyone.